everyone, once again, and welcome to another edition of the MMA Torch podcast. It is Thursday, November 5th, 2015. I am MMA Torch editor Jamie Pennock, joined tonight by MMA Torch senior columnist Sean Ennis and MMA Torch columnist Rich Hansen. Gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
I'm a little pissed off because I've been around almost as long as Sean and I deserve the super cool title too.
Disagree.
Well, so I more earned the columnist part of the title than you do, Mr. Ennis.
That is a
touché.
Truth fact.
Yes.
We'll say senior MMA Torch presence.
Yeah. Just switch it to MMA Torch audio contributor / sometime show coverer.
Yes.
/ sometimes I write up fight results.
/ generally cool guy.
Okay, now I'm calling shenanigans.
He took it a step too far. We were going to give you the first few.
Yes, 4 slashes is one too many. That's why Guns N' Roses fell apart.
We've got plenty to talk about this week. Lots of outside the cage stuff going on. We've got a couple of events this weekend to talk about. We're finally getting back into a swing of consistent events week to week after the UFC took several weeks off, and then we had Halloween last week as well. So we've got Bellator 145, UFC Fight Night 77 to talk about. They come up tomorrow and Saturday, respectively. We've got some injury stuff on Khabib Nurmagomedov once again. Jones Cormier talk, Verdum Velasquez, Nick Diaz, Misha Tate. Lots of things to get to on today's show. We're going to start with Diaz because it broke last week and it's continuing to gain steam that his team was in negotiations with the Nevada Athletic Commission on a settlement over his suspension for the failed marijuana drug test that has there's a lot of issues with the test itself. Plenty of issues with how the commission handled the entire hearing and handing down a 5-year suspension that they had no precedent for prior to that. And they've been getting a lot of pressure from the public. There's been a lot of backlash. They have yet to actually send Diaz's team the written decision, which means they have left themselves time to amend what the actual suspension will be, and that's what the settlement talks have been about, to avoid further litigation. It appears that it's going to be cut down to 18 months and a $100,000 fine, which would make Diaz eligible to fight by August 1st of 2016. Sean, I'm going to throw to you here first. What do you think about the Nevada Commission caving a little bit and actually backing down from what was an asinine decision to begin with? And I don't even know if it's making it right here, but making it better than it was.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's something that you would think had to happen, but it's also surprising that it did. The Nevada State Athletic Commission is not exactly the beacon of integrity or reasonable decisions. And so to see them kind of back off on one of the more ridiculous things that they've done is kind of refreshing a little bit, but also not refreshing in a way normal.
Yeah. Rich, I know you have not been you're not necessarily in Diaz's corner whatsoever. You're not defending the commission. At the same time, I know you don't really care about Diaz, given, you know, he kind of put himself in the situation. At the same time, what do you think about the developments here with a potential settlement coming?
Well, to put my own words into my own mouth, is that a thing?
It might be.
Yeah, it might be. But just to clarify exactly where I stand, I wrote a couple months ago that I hope that 5 years after the drug test, to the day 5 years after, everything gets overturned in the Supreme Court, pot is made legal, and his 5-year suspension is overturned all at the same time. That said, it's everyone wants to boil this down to a little bit of weed. Fine, a little bit of weed 3 separate times. You know, how many times do you have to break the same rule before you get the book thrown at you and before you stop getting, you know, the sympathy of millions of po-feeds throughout the country and even the world for that matter? I he's the wrong ambassador for the campaign that everybody around. So, you know, give him 5 years. I don't give a shit. You know, give him 18 months. I don't care. He's going to let everybody down again. The first chance that he's given to let everybody down again. And then what are they going to say after the fourth time? You know, 2 years. Oh, well, you know, event, you know, he's just the wrong ambassador. I fail to have any empathy for his light, even if, you know, he's fighting against an empire that's just as evil, you know, as it gets in this sport. Yeah, he's just the wrong guy to send a positive message out of it. I couldn't care less if they throw a bigger book at him.
I don't entirely disagree with you on Diaz himself. I really don't. At the same time, one of the biggest issues with this situation is just the inconsistency between the drug tests that were done on this night, because we have they have two
right.
drug test
the
results.
Unaccredited lab is the one that
the non-WADA accredited lab is the one that popped high, and the two samples that went to
I think it's hilarious. I really do. I couldn't care less that he's getting screwed. If that makes me self-righteous and sanctimonious, I don't really care.
That's
you
fine.
Know?
There's a very
it doesn't keep kids' mouths.
There's a very significant issue with the commission ignoring other evidence in favor of the one that supports the narrative that they would like it to support. And
Maybe they did factor in the evidence and it would have been an 8-year suspension. You don't know that, Jamie. How dare you put words into their mouth after putting words into my mouth, too.
I'm curious if there's still a case to be had with judicial review in this situation because of that fact, or if they just drop it and Diaz says, screw it, I will spend the next, you know, 9 months of this 18 months on the side and return next summer. Because there is still something to be said about that aspect of the case, that especially to fight something like a $100,000 fine, which I continue to believe the Nevada Commission's fines are so far beyond what anyone else does. It's fairly ridiculous. And Diaz, this is the second time it will have, you know, been at high five figures into six figures of a fine. The last one was 80 something thousand.
I saw what you did there. Look, we should ask Mike Bain about this, you know, giving the legal take, but it wouldn't surprise me if the sole motivation for the NAC is to avoid, you know, massive litigation that they don't think they could win. So, you know, cut their losses, get Diaz to sign a, you know, sheet of paper saying, I will not sue, I will not take any further legal action in exchange, you know, I will, you know, accept a much reduced punishment. That seems obvious, but, you know, again, Bain would be the person to ask, not me.
That was also part of the Access TV report from Inside MMA last week, that part of the motivation was the Attorney General telling the commission, you know, or encouraging the commission to take a settlement for that very fact, because Diaz absolutely had a very good case against them had this gone to judicial review, and they already had one situation turned back against them this year with Vanderlei Silva, lifetime ban that got thrown back to them. So,
yeah, I can't wait until that's reduced from lifetime to 28 years.
Yeah, Vanderlei Silva is a completely different story, and he continues to remain as oblivious as any person could possibly be over what is going on in their own lives and their own actions. But
he's the Mike Goldberg of MMA.
He really is. He really is. That is quite apt. Sean, any other thoughts on Diaz, the NAC, how this all was handled?
I'm just wondering, if Vanderlei Silva is the Mike Goldberg of MMA, then what is Mike Goldberg? Kind of blew my mind right now.
Well, he's not in MMA. He's MMA announcing. So
Mike
neither here nor there.
Oh, right. Mike Goldberg is the Mike Goldberg of broadcasting.
Hey, don't insult Vanderlei someone that hard.
Vanderlei.
Go easy on the guy.
Yeah, come on. He has kids, Jamie.
I was watching that Detroit Lions Vikings game that he commented that.
I'm glad someone was.
I didn't realize that Golden Tate played for my favorite team last year.
Didn't you?
Didn't know that.
But don't blame Mike Goldberg.
Let's move on to Jon Jones, Daniel Cormier, and the early 2016 schedule for the UFC, because some things are kind of moving around, and we're getting a little bit of a clearer picture over how early 2016 is going to play out. I was really, really, really of the belief that Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier would fight again on Super Bowl weekend, until Cormier said this week that after signing a new 8-fight deal with the UFC and speaking with the organization, they said that they would give him to after the holidays before discussing the next fight. And with that, they obviously want to have their Super Bowl weekend bout scheduled well ahead of end of December. So that was throwing that out, and now we got a report on Wednesday from UFC Tonight that they could be shifting the Fabricio Werdum Cain Velasquez fight to UFC 196. It's you all right there?
Rich is dying.
He might be. I hope not actually, because we don't want that on the show, but. Sean, it appears that Jones Cormier is getting pushed out, and Cormier might be coming around to the idea of fighting Jones in New York if that's what the UFC wants, if they can pull that off for April. I think it seems the plan right now, with them not really getting Werdum Velasquez in Brazil, is Werdum Velasquez Super Bowl weekend. And then they're setting up Jones Cormier for April in New York. If that doesn't happen, they'll fight on in a different location in either March or April. It seems to be the timetable right now. Thoughts on how that might play out there?
I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen in New York. but then I'm pessimistic on. Especially when the UFC is presumptuously scheduled an event before before the MMA is legal. So, you know, I don't think it's going to happen there. I don't know that it matters all that much whether it happens on Super Bowl weekend or not, at least from a draw perspective, because I think that the heavyweight fight is going to draw pretty well.
No. It didn't draw it. This division hasn't been drawing well. The heavyweight division has not been drawing well because Cain Velasquez has been hurt consistently, and it's delayed things. And he's coming off of a decisive loss, and they're doing an immediate rematch. No, I do not think this heavyweight championship fight is going to do all that well business wise.
I think they're going to load the card up with other fights. Yeah,
it's
you know
boxing.
What I mean. I think they're gonna load up the card with desirable fights to watch, so that it's not carried by one fight. Especially, I mean, really, given what Cormier did in his last buy, right? It's not a given that that the Cormier Jones fight is going to sell that much, really. What did the last Cormier Jones fight do?
Over 700.
So see, only 700, you know, and they do it again.
The difference here is you have Jones returning, and you have the redemption angle for Jones, and one of the best fighters in the world returning to the sport after a significant and high profile outside of the cage type situation. I think that fight is going to be
big. It's high profile in the bubble, Jamie.
It is.
It's not high profile compared to that little Irish guy who's always talking or the hot blonde chick. Okay?
Maybe.
That's outside of the bubble.
You know? I was also being a little facetious there, too. I think it'll probably do pretty well. I think Jones-Cormier will probably do better, but I think the Super Bowl weekend card, they're going to have a lot of focus on that, and they're going to put enough things on there that people want to see that it'll do pretty well. That may be just me being optimistic, too. I don't know.
Rich, what do you think about Super Bowl weekend plans and how this plays out early in the year?
There's no reason to if there's two variables. One is if the March pay-per-view is going to be in a football stadium in Brazil. And two, if they are able to run in New York at Madison Square Garden in April. It would seem that the reason word is coming out that they're moving or talking about moving the heavyweight title fight to Super Bowl weekend would lead one to believe that they're not going to have the football stadium in Curitiba or wherever it was supposed to be. I thought it was Curitiba. Which would then say, okay, well, why do we have to have that fight in March? Let's move it up to April, because they've, you know, both been out since June. They deserve, you know, to actually make some money. although if that were their motivation, they would have, you know, become janitors or something instead of fighting mixed martial arts. And Jamie, two touchdowns against you from Tyler Eifert so far.
Well, the way Lance is playing, I don't think I need to worry about it because
he'll get his lineup active. But then the second thing is New York. If New York happens, they'll know far enough in advance, you know, because this is eventually going to go to court, and they're not going to put all their ducks into Madison Square Garden only to have a judge overturn it on, say, you know, the second week of April, you know, when they're supposed to be fighting there the third weekend of April. You know what I mean? So if New York is confirmed and doesn't get overturned, that's going to be Jones-Cormier. There's just no doubt about that. The big question, this is what Sean brought up, and he's 100% right, there's no reason to think that it's going to happen there. You know, until it's actually cleared and every contract is signed, you know, don't believe that it's going to happen. If it doesn't happen there, then I think Jones and Cormier is going to go the other way and go to Memorial Day weekend, because that they try to make the holiday weekend shows, with the exception of Labor Day, they try to make to be their tent pole events, you know, to borrow from Scott Coker. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they go the other way with it. Now, that said, Jones has fought in April before, but considering that Cormier wants the time off, you know, that could be their way of throwing him a bone. And then as far as the amount of pay-per-views they have to have after Memorial Day, I would assume they would take June off, because they always shoehorn and wedge a pay-per-view into June, and the first legitimate pay-per-view that they've had in years was just last year, you know, and do it twice in a row, the earth is going to spin off its axis. So that's how they get to 200 come, you know, July. Is it July 2nd or July 9th?
It's July 9th. They push it to the next week.
They advertised it as the 2nd when it rolled out.
Yeah, and then they push it.
So how is it all going to play out? Probably like that. And then they'll find, you know, some pay-per-view to throw together in March, and it won't be a major one. And then April, like, will either be New York or it'll be, you know, just another pay-per-view, because that's in between their, you know, tent-pole Super Bowl and Memorial Day weekend shows. That's what I see.
Yeah, I don't even think the UFC expects to run New York in April. It's very clearly a legal maneuver, because the last time they brought the lawsuit in, it got thrown out in part because they couldn't prove damages without an event on the schedule. That is, it's one of the things that was explicitly laid out by the judge whom will hear this case again when they bring it back and now have a fight on the docket.
Do we know a date on that hearing?
I believe it's this month, but I'm not entirely certain.
Well, then there you go. I mean, yeah. Cormier will know when he has to you know, start getting ready. I mean, and the one thing I agree with Anthony Johnson on is that, you know, what has Cormier done to deserve the right to say, yeah, I want to take a few extra months off? You know, Rumble actually had this one right, in between throwing yoga mats, that that, you know, hold the title for 2 years, you know, then you can, you know, start to dictate a little bit to the division. But I mean, obviously Anthony Johnson has a vested interest in Daniel Cormier fighting as soon as possible, because if he's going to be fighting Bader at the end of end of January, and then he wants to know, if assuming he trucks Bader, which he will, he wants to know when his next fight for the title is going to be, because he's the next guy. So
yeah, and right now we're I see both sides of it, because you know, I don't begrudge any fighter wanting to take a little time off when they've fought, you know,
right,
3-4 times within a year span, whatever it's been. But at the same time, Cormier is absolutely not in a spot to be dictating terms.
Correct.
He just isn't. And
that's one of the downsides of being the champion, is you have a responsibility to defend your title. You know, whereas if you're any type of contender or non-champion, you can fight it, for lack of a better phrase, you can fight at your leisure, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned Bader Johnson at the end of the month. It was announced yesterday, actually, that those two will fight at UFC on Fox 18 in Newark, New Jersey. They're returning to the Prudential Center for a Fox event. Was it 9 months after their last one there? They ran Fox 15 in April of this year in that venue. So that fight, Bader obviously with Jones getting reinstated and set to fight Cormier, understood where he was at, and he's forced to take another significant fight in order to continue on in his hope for a light heavyweight title fight, which obviously, Rich, you don't believe he's going to get there. Sean, do you think Bader has a chance at beating Rumble Johnson here in January?
In a word, no. Johnson is better. He's a better striker.
How about in two
words? Heck no. He's a better striker, and he's good enough to stay away from Bader's strengths, so it's not going to happen.
Right. There's so little break. There's so little to break down and analyze in this fight.
There really is.
Yeah.
In another,
not to kill your, you know, the next minute of the podcast, Jamie, where you were going to ask questions about that, but we both, you know, we have formed a fighters columnist association, and we are sticking and banding together that we refuse to answer any questions on this topic.
Fair enough. In unfortunate injury news, Khabib Nurmagomedov once again has been forced to pull out of a fight. He hasn't fought since beating Rafael Dos Anjos last, what was it, April?
Whatever. I just say last year. It's last late enough year, this year. That's a pretty long absence.
It's been about 18 months, and it's going to continue. And now we have an extremely talented young fighter in Nurmagomedov, who is 22-0 on his career, seriously contemplating retirement because he's not seeing light at the end of the tunnel on these injury issues. This time it's a rib after a couple of knee ailments, and he's out of a fight with Tony Ferguson on the Ultimate Fighter 22 finale on December 11th. Ferguson will now fight Edson Barbosa in what is a very solid lightweight fight. It's just a damn shame that someone in Nurmagomedov's position, who, you know, holds a win over the current champion and is very much one of the best fighters in the division, is now unsure about his future because of these injuries. And obviously, you know, UFC pay comes into this, the fact that he, you know, hasn't fought in 18, 19 months and hasn't been paid because of that. It plays into this, but it's a really unfortunate situation here. Sean, thoughts on Nurmagomedov's injury here and the replacement fight that we've got between Ferguson and Barbosa.
Unfortunately, you can't say it's surprising. You know, you just hope that it's not the first domino to fall in this outstanding lineup that's coming up over here over the next month or so. Whether he, about the whole retirement thing, you know, I think that might be more of a recency, you know, depression kind of thing setting in.
Never heard Dominic Cruz say it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, and this was a broken rib. This wasn't blowing out his knee and having a cadaver rejected and then blowing out his other knee.
So I don't see that happening. You know, it would surprise me if we didn't see Nurmagomedov, you know, as soon as he can get back into the cage. Of course, at this point, who knows when that is due to all the injuries. But you know, I don't see him. I don't see him going the TJ Grant route or anything at this point.
Rich, what do you think about the injury and the new fight for December 11th?
Well, he's coming back. I mean, there's just no way that he's going to let a broken rib be the straw that broke the camel's back, you know? And you can say all you want about, you know, UFC fighter pay. Well, compared to, I don't know, being a bouncer or working mall security, you know, in downtown, you know, he's coming back. As far as the next fight, all these fights are theoretical, and there's so many of them. It's not like any of us or anybody outside of Ferguson's people, Nurmagomedov's people, took any time analyzing what was going to happen in the fight between Nurmagomedov and Ferguson. So it's theoretical. It's not a loss to me. All I know is that there is going to be a fight, knock on wood, between Tony Ferguson and Edson Barboza, and that it's fantastic. You know, now let's stop jinxing it.
Yeah, that's kind of the nice thing about the lightweight division is, like, you lose a fight like this and you gain. I mean, you know, you don't. There's not a whole lot lost.
Right. And if either of them get pulled out, then Anthony Pettis or Eddie Alvarez will be moved up a month and take that slot, and you know, nothing will again be lost.
Yeah. And really, when Nurmagomedov comes back, you know, there's a slew of guys that he can fight that'll be interesting still. So you really don't lose a whole lot from a fan standpoint. I mean, it sucks for Nurmagomedov, obviously, but, you know, it's not the end of the world.
Maybe he can fight Abel Trujillo again.
let's move on to the fights coming up this weekend. We've got two events hitting television on cable. We've got Bellator 145 from the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis, Missouri on Spike. UFC Fight Night 77, Belfort vs. Henderson 3 from Sao Paulo, Brazil on Fox Sports 1. There's some good fights this weekend. There really are. The main card for Bellator, we've got the Pitbull Freje-Daniel Strauss rematch. It's not the most sensible rematch. It's not a fight that's all that necessary. Given they fought in January and Pitbull won that fight by submission, but that's what we've got with Bellator, where we've got a few guys who are elite in each division and they beat each other or they beat the guys they're supposed to beat to fight each other again. We've got Will Brooks defending his lightweight title against Marcin Held on this card. Michael Chandler against David Rickles, Bobby Lashley, James Thompson, and Emmanuel Sanchez against Justin Lawrence in a sneaky good featherweight fight as well. The Spike card, really solid, one of the better lineups from Bellator on Spike in a while. But before we even got to Fight Night, we had an altercation between Will Brooks and the Pitbull brothers this week. It happened on Wednesday. We still don't have all of the information. Apparently there is video of what happened. Brooks went on Twitter and said that he got sucker punched by the Pitbulls while he was on the phone with his mother. The Patricio fired back and called Brooks a liar and said that he threw the first punch at Patricky, which isn't necessarily out of character given the fact that Brooks had already said in the past that the next time he saw them, he was going to smack Patricio in the face. So, absolutely ridiculous and not what you're supposed to see out of professional fighters situation that happened in a fighter hotel on Wednesday. Sean, what do you make of that incident before we get to
you
the
always go to
themselves?
Sean first.
Yeah, you've been calling.
I always have really good lines, and then you go to him, and the momentum's lost.
I'm really trying to just give you time to, you know, get your throat clear and not be hacking up a lung when I throw to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were pretty concerned there a minute ago. We thought if you weren't
you thought
dying,
I'd come back.
We thought at least if you weren't dying, at least your mute button was. So we weren't sure what was going on over there.
Well, it's just my way of drawing attention to myself.
Like, you need more of that.
That's right.
Anyway. Onto my
so anyways, you starting to Sean anyways, even after my protest?
Yeah.
In spite, yeah, well, because of them, probably, really.
Fine. Right. We'll see just how short my answer is next time.
Thanks, Tim Sylvia.
So, with this guy,
that,
I think,
that'll get me talking. Call me Tim Sylvia. Okay. The guy shits his pants one time, and all of a sudden, he's Tim Sylvia. I was 9, damn it.
39. Anyway, usually, you know, as usual with this kind of thing, with the Will Brooks and Pitbull Brothers situation, you know, you've got what each side situation. You've got. You've
this
got
is the guy you throw to. He can't even say the word association.
I mean, I'm regretting my choice already.
Good.
I always like to sneak that kind of stuff in there just to see how fast I get called out on it.
You
anyway,
karma is Khabib now, Jamie. Good for you.
with this sucker punching situation, you have what Will Brooks says, and you have what the Pitbull Brothers say, and then what's accurate is probably somewhere in the middle. You know, would it surprise me if either one of them was embellishing a little bit? No, and you know, it's probably you know, like you said, Will Brooks said he was gonna slap the guy next time he saw him. He probably did a little slapping, and then maybe he turned around and got sucker punched, and that's
who threatens to slap other than like someone in the Californians on Saturday Night Live, you know?
Bellator champions, apparently.
Yes, you only use a closed fist inside the cage. Outside, you slap.
Except at UFC, whatever it was in Detroit.
He was
Dan
using...
Dan Severn said, screw your slaps.
He got it from the Boss Rutan training dummy.
That's right.
That I think that comes with the video.
Kenny Rice?
The open hand slaps.
Oh training man. Dummy. My bad.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
Boy, a Dan Severn open hand slap and Kenny Rice insult all in one.
It's pretty impressive,
yet
I gotta say.
Yet you feed Deshaun first.
That's the situation we're in.
Uh-huh. So go ahead, feed Deshaun. I don't care.
I already ate.
Rich, do you even care about anything that happens outside?
Not anymore, I don't. I did up until 3 minutes ago.
I really don't think you did.
No, I don't know. I don't believe that either.
No, but I had a good line, and I took the line now.
All right. Well, how about the event itself? What do you think about the?
It's been overshadowed by what happened yesterday at the hotel.
Yeah, a little bit. What do you think about?
I can just see the commercials now. They're going to put Will Brooks on the screen, and then they're going to put Pitbull on the screen. And say these two champions hate each other more than anyone else in the sport of mixed martial arts. Watch them not fight each other. And then they go to Sean Grandy. I mean, if you're going to manufacture a feud, at least manufacture a feud between two guys who are going to fight each other, or at least are in the same weight class and could eventually fight each other.
Yep.
Is it one of the pit bulls at 155?
Patrick is, yeah.
Yeah. He's the lesser pit bull, though, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Quite.
He's the...
Indubitably.
He's the not gumming anywhere near a championship pit bull.
Correct.
Ah, I see.
Mind you, both of them are not anywhere near a champion if they were in the number one organization in the sport.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could probably say that about Will Brooks, too.
Well, could.
Maybe less so, but
yes.
Still.
No, Patricki is the one that lost to Lloyd Woodard and Bellator. And we'll just stop right there.
Ah.
Famous Browns quarterback, Derek Anderson. Famous Kentucky point guard, Derek Anderson.
Pitbull beat Strauss, was 10 months ago. At Bellator 132, Strauss picked up a submission win in June over Henry Corrales and got thrown back in because Bellator decided they didn't have any other featherweights available.
Dude, Bellator didn't decide that. Everybody decided.
True. Pitbull's won 7 straight, going back to a split decision loss to Pat Curran. He's 12-2 in Bellator overall. His only losses by split decision. Strauss has had moments of brilliance. His win over Pat Curran was solid. He had a really good win over Justin Wilcox last October.
That was back when we thought Pat Curran was Pat freaking Curran.
True.
Not, ugh, Pat Curran.
Yeah. But I think it's clear that Pitbull is the better fighter of the two. I don't think there's any question on that front.
Pretty much been proven.
Is there anything that Strauss can do here to pull off the upset? Because I'm not seeing it at all.
No.
There's nothing that Strauss does better than Pitbull.
So. Well, look. Yeah. Let's actually try and be serious about this.
Who's not being serious?
No, look, Pitbull has had more than his fair share of fights where he gets knocked around and then just says, okay, I'm going to murder you now, and then murders somebody shortly after almost being knocked out himself. I mean, you know, he takes a lot of punishment.
Strauss isn't that type of fighter, though.
Strauss is, but Strauss is capable of making the fight ugly. I'm sure Strauss is more than able to get inside on Pitbull. He could frustrate Pitbull and bore the living hell out of everybody watching the fight. Now, can he do that against Pitbull for 25 minutes? He's going to have a major size advantage on the guy. It's possible. You know, I mean, theoretically possible. I mean, he's won upset fights before. You know, nobody thought he was going to beat Curran in 2013 to win the championship, even if he lost the very next time out. In both of those fights, he controlled what happened. You know, I mean, at least until the end when Curran choked him out, you know, with 20 seconds left in that fight.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't supposed to beat Justin Wilcox, and he knocked him out less than a minute. So, I mean, could he? Yeah, he could impose himself. He could use his size to advantage. Pitbull could come in the wrong frame of mind, focusing on something other than Daniel Strauss. All of these things could coalesce and lead to an ugly upset for Strauss. I'm not counting on it, but you asked for a path. Put some of those elements together, and we could see something different than the expected Pitbull romp. I don't think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all even if Strauss wins the first round, looks really good in the second, gets caught by something, and, you know, he's put out in the third. You know, that's kind of how I see it going, and then everyone goes, wow, it took Pitbull long enough to finally get it turned on. Well, that shouldn't be a shock, because he's not always the guy who's going out and beating you in 9 seconds. You know, he's not WEC Jose Aldo.
Yeah. In the co-main event, Marcin Held on a 6-fight winning streak is getting a shot at the Bellator lightweight championship for the first time in his 4-year run with the organization. Coming up about 4.5 years here. Will Brooks, off of 2 really, really good performances against Michael Chandler, had a workmanlike win over Dave Jansen to retain the title in April. He's been a bit disgruntled with the organization and how they have handled promoting him while simultaneously bringing in names like Kimbo Slice and Ken Shamrock and Tito Ortiz and all of that.
Hey, I know who all those guys are.
And then
what are we talking about?
Exactly.
Right.
And he also missed weight on his first attempt today for the fight tomorrow.
But he did make it the second time around.
He did make it on the second time around, which is a little odd because I could have sworn they didn't really allow for a re-weigh-in on a title fight. Apparently, the Missouri Commission has allowed that. Held
I'm assuming
is...
there is a Missouri Commission.
Stupid Nick Diaz. Oh, we're not on that anymore?
No, we're not on that anymore.
Sorry.
I actually
still really, irrelevant though.
I actually really like this fight. I like Marcin Held. He is extremely one-dimensional. He's got a little bit of striking ability, but it's very clear that his submission game is the be-all end-all of his skill set. And at the same time, it works for him because he's very good and probably as good as it gets in Bellator at accomplishing what he wants to accomplish on the ground. Will Brooks is an extremely difficult out, but I think the fight itself is intriguing. Sean, you took over the main event here. You took over the main event. I'm giving Sean a little bit of chance to have something to say about the co-main.
I want you to throw to me first for the rest of the show, just so that we can hear that sound again at some point.
I'm just going to start talking over people. It's come to that.
Start? You're just going to start talking
over people? That's right.
So. About Will Brooks and Marcin Hill. So here's the thing with that fight is probably the best lightweight fight they can put on at this point. And, you know, that may be them, but it's a good fight. You know, Brooks Held is a good fight. I do think that Brooks is probably going to win it, and I think, Jamie, you're pretty spot on with the analysis there. Held has a good enough game to give Will Brooks some trouble, but, you know, Brooks is probably savvy enough to stay away from that enough to take either take a decision or get Held in enough trouble that he can get the a stoppage due to strikes. But Rich, of course, knowing more about Bellator than I do, probably has some better analysis than that.
I had good analysis, but it's been lost in the ether because you wouldn't shut up. I don't know. I had some reference about, you know, great athlete Will Brooks, proven track record Will Brooks, and some comparison to Marcin Held being, you know, future Paul Sass and you know, murder choke death from Will Brooks rather easily, but it's all gone now. But the Paul Sass thing, I think, is, you know, spot on.
Yeah, it's a very fair comparison.
Thank you, Jamie.
So what submission would he name after himself? Would it be like a Held hook?
It doesn't matter.
that's Paul Harris' specialty.
Yes.
That's true.
We've got a couple of rematches on the undercard here in Michael Chandler, David Rickles, Bobby Lashley, James Thompson. I actually talked to Rickles last week, and we'll have something up on that tomorrow prior to the fight. Chandler knocked him out last time around.
I'm definitely avoiding the site for 24 hours.
Chandler knocked him out last time around. He would be on a run of 3 wins in his last 4 fights, but he made a gigantic mental error in throwing an illegal knee on John Alessio when he had him dead to rights in June. Chandler coming in after halting a 3-fight losing streak, those 3 losses coming to Alvarez and Will Brooks. Any chance David Rickles can pull anything off against Michael Chandler? Rich?
What? Me? Oh, sorry, I haven't gone through my prep yet. I'm not. No, there's no chance he's going to. I mean, maybe he makes it past a minute.
Anything that you have to say about Bobby Lashley rematching James Thompson?
Who?
And finally, any comments?
No,
on Emmanuel?
I do. I really want James Thompson to win this fight just to set up Kimbo versus James Thompson too.
Oh my!
Oh man!
You know that's coming in February.
Right.
If that happens. That's absolutely coming
right.
in February.
I mean, seriously, Bobby Lashley might literally end the life of Kimbo Slice. Whereas James Thompson versus Kimbo Slice, say what you want, at least it will be a total and complete clusterfuck.
Just for perspective's sake, the Kimbo Slice-James Thompson fight for Elite XC, the first ever network television main event, that was the very first main event I covered live for the site. That's how long ago.
You couldn't just retire
was.
On top after that, Jamie? Blows my mind. Seriously, can you think of one moment that tops that, short of maybe the other 2 Elite XC shows? And even if you want to say Elite XC as a whole in that 6-month period, what's ever going to top that?
I think we Nothing. should go. I think we should go back and one of these podcasts, we should just run down your Shark Fights commentary when you had Don Fry on.
Don Fry, yes, Don Fry and Boss Rutan doing commentary on Shark Fights.
Oh my gosh.
That was one of the more entertaining event write-ups we've had on the site.
Oh, yeah, so basically we're just chasing the high of that first Elite XC event.
Absolutely.
And never have found it since.
Back to Nick Diaz.
Wrapping up the main card, Emmanuel Sanchez takes on Justin Lawrence of the Ultimate Fighter Live.
Sorry.
I actually like Justin Lawrence as a fighter. He's a solid young guy. He's still just 25. You know, he lost
John to... That makes two.
He lost to Max Holloway and Daniel Pineda in 2012 and 2013, respectively. And he's won four straight since then. I think his future includes another run in the UFC. And Emmanuel Sanchez is another 25-year-old entering here.
Just weighed like 4 pounds
so far
today.
It might have been.
I think I saw 148.4.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Didn't Paul Tanner just beat the shit out of him, too, in a Bellator glory fight?
Yeah.
No, maybe. It was someone else,
no.
But whatever.
Maybe. That's how little it mattered.
Well, it's hard to control your weight when you're also playing receiver for the Broncos.
No, that's not the same.
You're thinking
of Wes Welker, Sean.
Oh,
Weller,
sorry.
Is the name.
I think. I get white guys confused.
Yes, well. Yes, you definitely confuse me.
See?
Sean, any final thoughts on those three undercard fights on the Spike broadcast?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
Now, if we had Pelkey here, we could grill him on the undercard.
We could swing to him for whatever happened on the what's on. I'm blanking now, and I ruined the joke. So screw it. We're moving on.
I mean, if Pelkey were around, I would definitely get him to to break down the fight between the one name. Either of you know the one name on the prelim card that has some familiarity to anybody listening to this?
Chris Heatherly.
No.
Jamie?
I'll give you Adam both Silla. A hint. Uriah Hall built his name off of this guy's carcass.
Oh yeah.
Adam, is it Adam Silla?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the feature fight of the prelims.
Oh, yeah.
Right, just to let you know that Bellator is not to be taken too seriously yet.
Well, there's certainly enough material there to break down. I mean, there's what, 10, 11 prelims?
Something like that. So they've definitely cut it down from what they did in San Jose. Say 2 months ago.
Yeah. So the event starts in about 10 minutes, and then the main event will be on tomorrow night.
Yeah. Someone get Pelkey on the line so we can break down Brandon Lowe versus Rashard Lovelace, please.
I'm still waiting on his report from Pancrase last weekend. So
last weekend, I'm waiting on his report from Pancrase from 2012 when he went all D.B. Sweeney on us.
Saturday night, the UFC returns.
I was impressed by the D.B. Sweeney reference. That was pretty good on a fly. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, of course, D.B. Sweeney is an actor, and I got the name wrong, but we knew who I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Right.
He may be hanging from a parachute somewhere. You never know.
D.B. Cooper.
It was good.
You know, like the receiver is going to beat you next week, Sean.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, that's right.
Saturday night, the UFC returns to Fox Sports 1.
Sweeney, what a dipshit.
I was willing to just let it slide, so... Anyway. Vitor Belfort, Dan Henderson fight for the third time.
Can we talk more about Adam Silla?
We can talk more about the undercard, because there's a lot more to like here. Glover Teixeira fighting...
Is on it. There's not that much more to like here.
Well, he's on the prelims, and I don't even care to talk about the prelims, so... I'm talking more about the likes of Glover Teixeira, Thomas Almeida, Alex Oliveira.
Corey Anderson, Anthony Burchak. Oh,
Burchak looked really good in his last fight, and that fight with Thomas Almeida is going to be quite entertaining. So I wouldn't be downplaying that one. I think Almeida-Burchak is a really solid main card fight here. Yeah, I like Tashera Cummins. I like Almeida Vercek. I like Oliveira against Piotr Hellman. I like Gilbert Burns against Rashid Magomedov. I don't care about Corey Anderson whatsoever. Fabio Maldonado has been entertaining enough, but that is clearly the worst fight on the main card. Gleison Tibau, Abel Trujillo, Jan Cabral, Johnny Case, Kevin Souza, Chaz Skelly, Viscardi Andrade, Gasan Umalatov, Pedro Munoz, mm-hmm. Jimmy Rivera, something else I don't care about, and another fight I don't care about. That's what's happening.
Hey, you're short shrifting Thiago Tavares here.
Thiago Tavares.
Hey, whatever grudge you might have against Clay Guida, how dare you short shrift Thiago Tavares?
I mean, I hope Tavares shows Guida just how much it's time for
journalistic
retirement.
Integrity, Jamie. Journalistic integrity.
There's whatever.
Right down the middle.
Right down the middle.
I love that. I love that Thiago Tavares and Gleison Tibau are on the same card. You know, two guys that have been in the very middle of the lightweight division for like 8 years.
Gleison Tibau is on his like 2,900th fight in the UFC.
I feel bad for Gleison Tibau. He's never gonna get a Reebok raise again.
It's true. It's true. He has hit his limit.
What, you gonna feed to one of us from that, Jamie?
Nope.
Fine with me. The less I have to talk about Gleison Tibau fights, the better. But really, who he's fighting Abel Trujillo. Now, on principle, you can't cheer for Abel Trujillo because of the whole, you know, 3.5 billion women that listen to us who'd be totally alienated for life if we ever supported a dickhead like him. But on the other hand, Gleison Tibau's boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, go Abel. Because if Abel Gleison Tibau is making $20,000 a fight in Reebok money, and he draws exactly -7 billion people to every single fight he watches. Because every single time he fights, at least 7 billion people aren't watching.
Yeah.
He's not worth the Reebok money. So if he loses two in a row because he's coming off a loss, he might get cut. So for the greater good, go Abel Trujillo.
Well, you figure if Trujillo wins, it'll at least be shorter.
Could be.
Yeah. All right, let's focus on the main card and some of the actual.
Yes, let's do that, Jamie.
On this one, Belfort looked a shell of what he was on his 3-fight winning streak into getting a title fight when he lost to Chris Weidman earlier this year. Dan Henderson had a bit of a resurgence against Tim Boach, but is still well on the downside of his career, got stopped by Belfort just 2 years ago in a similar event in Brazil.
Resistal.
I think Dan Henderson can win this fight. I don't know where Vitor Belfort is post TRT entirely. I don't know that we're going to see a ton out of him, but nothing would surprise me in how this fight plays out, because Dan Henderson's as capable of stopping Belfort as Belfort is of trucking through him in a couple of minutes, because that's where Dan Henderson is at this point in his career. Sean, thoughts on the main event?
Well,
I make it brief.
I'll try. This, first of all, just on the card in general, this is one of those weird cards where, like, you look at it and you look at the main card and you say, hey, it's a pretty good main card. And then you get to the main event and you say, oh. And then, you know, like, it's a weird thing because, like, in Belfort Henderson, it's just there's no fight for either guy that makes sense other than this fight. So yeah. You wonder what's going to happen after this particular fight. But as far as the analysis goes, I see this fight going one of two ways. One, Vitor Belfort comes out, does Vitor Belfort things, and stops the fight early. Two, Vitor Belfort comes out, does Vitor Belfort things, gasses out, and then Dan Henderson stalks him with a right hand for the remainder of the fight, or knocks him out, one or the other. But either way, Vitor Belfort will not be fighting after the first round, whether it's because he's too gassed to move or because the fight's over is anybody's guess.
Yeah, I think Dane Fox put it pretty well in his preliminary card preview earlier today about the main event, where it's kind of set up the same philosophy of what Bellator was trying to do with the Kimbo Slice Ken Shamrock event in June, where you have two recognizable names and stack it with a bunch more entertaining potential prospects or legitimate fights under that. That's kind of what this card is in Brazil, because the main event is the least interesting fight on the main card outside of anything having to do with Corey Anderson. Rich, thoughts on Belfort Henderson and Glover Teixeira taking on Patrick Cummins in the light heavyweight field?
Well, a slight disagreement that this is the only fight that makes sense for Vitor or even for Henderson
coming
off.
Don't disagree with me. Don't disagree.
No, I'm not.
It just makes you look bad.
I really like the concept of what you said. I mean, it was cute, but, you know, I mean, you can't see either of them fighting Michael Bisping and fighting Tim Kennedy next.
Listen, the next time I see you, I'm going to slap you. Okay?
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Pitbull. I mean, those are fights that make sense. And I'm actually looking forward to one of them fighting Bisping and one of them fighting Kennedy a hell of a lot more than I'm looking forward to this fight. Sean's analysis on it, you know, by all conventional means, makes complete sense. You know, the fight is totally in Vitor's hands. Either he's going to finish the fight early or he's eventually going to get finished. I mean, that seems completely logical. Case for, you know, that it they both slide downhill and just don't have the ability to finish the other, and they're both sucking oxygen. This is one of those fights that they wouldn't put on in Denver or Mexico City or anywhere in China, for that matter. You know, I can't imagine that the second minute of the fight will be better than the first minute of the fight, that the third minute of the fight will be better than the second minute of the fight, so on so forth. You know, okay, maybe being too harsh, I'll give them the first 3 minutes could be really good, but you know me, Jamie, I mean, I've said all along that the worst fight I've ever seen, and I completely predicted, was Machida Henderson, because Henderson's completely a counter striker. So if Vitor loses his ability or wherewithal to be crazy berserker Vitor, this is going to just be 20 minutes after the first round of a total crap storm. That said, Dan Henderson hasn't shown me anything, and everything that we're saying about Vitor is based on a change of physique and not being as good as Chris Weidman, who, lest we forget, almost lost to Vitor Belfort in the first minute of that fight. So you put all that together, and I do think this is the last time we see Dan Henderson fight, or at least for the UFC, because I think he's going to get the talk from Dana about a week and a half after this fight is over. And it wouldn't shock me, you know, if come Fox Sports 1 on Wednesday, because I don't know if Dana's going down to Brazil for this fight, either in the post-fight press conference or on Fox Sports 1, if Dana White says, yeah, I had a talk with Dan Henderson, and I told him I don't ever want to see him fight again. He's never said that publicly about anyone who actually returned to fighting. So, yeah, I've talked myself into Vitor by murder.
Thoughts on Teixeira Cummins at light heavyweight here in the co-main event?
Cummins is underrated. Teixeira is just better.
Yeah.
That said, you know, it's eminently possible that Cummins can make the fight ugly, because that's what he's good at. You know, I mean, Glover Teixeira has had his moments. He didn't look great against Rampage. You know, Teixeira didn't. Because remember, that was that fight in Chicago on the Fox show a couple years ago. He was supposed to just, you know, truck, and he won that fight, but he made Rampage look kind of good in the process. You know, and then the win over Tahuna, James Tahuna, whatever, that Ryan Bader fight, you know, he didn't look good until the last second of the fight. You know, you can put together exactly what I mean by that. And then John Jones, I think we just never have to talk about any fight John Jones in, because there's no reason to use that as a comparison for anything else. You know, he got beat badly by Phil Davis, and then he's clearly better than Ovince St. Preux. But the fight that this could turn into is the Davis fight. You know, are you going to tell me that Phil Davis is so much of a better wrestler than Patrick Cummins that Phil Davis couldn't, you know, that Patrick Cummins couldn't impose that style of fight for 15 minutes? Absolutely he could. Just don't think he will. I think that Teixeira is going to win a tough decision fight here, and Cummins is going to come out of the fight looking better than he did going in.
Sean, any thoughts on that co-main event there?
I think Rich pretty much nailed it all. I completely agree. I think this is one of those – I really like this fight because it's one of those fights where you have a pretty good idea of who the better fighter is, but at the same time, the other guy can still make it interesting. So it's – but I'm right with Rich on all that stuff.
Ah! Mm.
Honestly, for me, Thomas Almeida, Anthony Berchek is the fight I'm most looking forward to on this card. Berchek had a slip up. It's because I'm what?
You're an MMA snob, that's why. Oh, I'm not looking forward to the main event. I'm looking forward to who's the name I know? Anthony Berchek. That's the fight I'm looking forward to.
You
lowly commoners have no idea what you're going to be missing if you skip that fight.
He looked very good against Joe Soto. It's just Joe Soto. I get that. He lost to Ian Entwistle in his debut. Thomas Almeida is the one I'm most looking forward to watching on this card. He's 20-0 coming off of one of the best highlights of the year in a flying knee knockout of Brad Pickett in what was a very good fight to begin with. He stopped Yves Jabouin before that. He's 3-0 in the UFC, 20-0 overall in his career. Thomas Almeida is a potential star at bantamweight, and he's just 24 years old. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how he performs in this one. And Berchek is a solid test given what he did in his last outing. Sean,
Jamie, did you mute your headset while I was trying to throw you off, and you were just so tunnel vision focused on talking about this fight that there was no stopping you?
He was going to make those points about Anthony Berchek.
I was absolutely going to make those points. Yes, there was.
So you
no
had the
stopping.
Headset off. Okay. Journalistic integrity restored.
Sean, thoughts on
Ben Askren and BJ Penn reference?
Thoughts on the bantamweight matchup here, and Thomas Almeida looking to make another statement in the division.
Yeah, I thought that Thomas Almeida was going to truck Brad Pickett, and I think he's going to truck Anthony Berchek too. The Pickett fight ended up being more competitive than I thought it was going to be going in. But I think even for that reason, you're going to see a more determined, a more focused Thomas Almeida, and he's going to come in here and take care of business.
Rich, any thoughts on that matchup?
Beyond what Sean just said? No.
Yeah, okay.
No, this is a showcase fight. I like Berchek. I was throwing his name out there because I was get ready for it, doing a bit.
You?
I like Berchek.
Come on.
No, really, really.
Seems
you know,
so out of character.
Yes, I know. I have character. I like Berchek. There's nothing not to like about him. You know, I mean, who can forget his massive win over Tito Jones at MFC 38? He's getting trucked.
I don't really have anything else for the rest of the card here. I like Alex Oliveira well enough. Gilbert Burns is solid. Rashid Magomedov is solid. I don't anything.
Oliveira
more?
And Burns should be fighting each other. Don't I mean? Is that at least safe enough to say?
Yeah, probably.
Right. I mean, that would be – you put those four fighters in a room.
I mean, well,
you know,
actually,
and
no.
And you have
no,
two
scratch
captains.
That.
Those are the two captains you're
scratch,
picking.
Scratch that because they just fought.
So?
that was Burns' last fight.
Yes.
So, Sean,
yes.
Anything else to add on this card?
No, I think we pretty much hit the meat of the card. You know, it's a solid main card, and a few solid undercard fights should be a fun watch. But yeah, not a whole lot to analyze.
Fair enough. Moving on from there,
can we just give a little bit of credit to Thiago Tavares and whatever or positive vibes or, you know, whatever it is that helps him, you know, look like the best fighter in the world for up to 15 minutes. Can we at least send that positive juju his way?
Absolutely.
Done.
I've been doing it this whole time. Okay.
But I always doubt your sincerity, so I'm not sure if you really mean that or if you're just trying to placate me.
Oh, I mean it.
See?
Moving on from those events, a few other things to touch on here before we close out tonight. I want to discuss the Miesha Tate situation just briefly because it's a scenario that the UFC...
You mean how Dana righted a wrong and she's all pissy about it now? That one?
I don't know that I'd characterize it that way.
Accurately?
No, I don't even know that that's accurate because I don't know that Holly Holm being in that fight is righting a wrong.
But pulling her out of it is.
Maybe. Not the way that they did it. That's part of the issue.
Pulled it out in an insensitive manner. I'm going to retire and do nothing for the rest of my life.
Well, we can tell what Rich's take is going to be on this, Sean.
Tate... It's the only way I make sure if you're not going to throw it to me first, then I'm just going to grab it. So go ahead, feed it, Sean.
Sean,
I'll do it. Sean, give your
Sean, I think Tate has legitimate gripes with the way that the UFC handled the situation, and I think it's something that they do time and time again, where they seem to have fighters who are directly affected by their decision making finding out via Twitter or, in this case, I believe it was ESPN, and not from the organization directly. Obviously, they have however many fighters on the roster.
So stay off Twitter. Is it Dana White's fault that Miesha Tate can't get off her damn phone? All right, now I'm just being a dick.
Sean, this week she talked about how she wants to meet with the organization and have a conversation about her, essentially her worth, and with what she's getting paid right now, because as she aptly discussed, they're wanting her to fight someone like Amanda Nunes, who is ranked higher currently than Holly Holm. Well,
they want her to fight someone like Amanda Nunes? I don't think that exists.
They want her to fight Amanda Nunes, who's ranked higher than Holly
really
Holm.
Really saying what he means.
Yeah. They wanted her to fight Amanda Nunes, and they wanted her to do that on UFC Fight Pass. That was what was presented to her. I think she rightfully turned that down, and she wants to have a discussion over how much money she is worth to the organization, and she has a dollar amount in mind, and she plans on letting them know that. I think she is more of a draw for the organization than they're giving her credit for, and based on the pay she's received in her last several fights and some of the things that she has said, I don't think that she has been paid in kind as one of the bigger names not named Ronda Rousey in all of women's MMA at this point. I'm not even a gigantic Miesha Tate supporter, but I think that she has some very valid complaints and issues with how things have gone over the last several months. What do you think of what's been going on here with Tate and in her recent comments and everything happening in that?
She's not wrong. You know, it's like you said, it's something that the UFC routinely does, is, you know, basically not treating people with respect. You know, I mean, how hard is it to pick up the phone and call somebody before making an announcement via ESPN or Twitter or whatever?
I don't know, Sean. How hard is it?
Obviously pretty hard.
Have you tried calling Sean, Jamie? It's not hard to pick up the phone. It's hard to get some people to answer the phone.
It's also true. Or respond to text messages or trade offers until well after the...
Hey, listen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have to contemplate trade offers. And
yeah,
if
Sean,
I don't
you're
come
the new
to
Brent.
Decision,
by the way, you're this year's Brent.
If I don't... come to a decision before, and there's my decision. That's just how it goes sometimes. Anyway, as I was saying, Before I was so reasonably interrupted.
Was this my fault?
It might have been. Are.
Most things are.
Shut up, Brent.
It's not that hard to pick up the phone and send a text since we're in 2015 to somebody and let them know what's going on. It's kind of indefensible what they do, even though it may not be the hugest deal in the world. There's no real reason to do it, you know? So yeah, I don't think she's wrong in wanting to have this conversation. I think more fighters should at least try to make the situation uncomfortable for the UFC when they do this kind of thing. Or just generally, really.
That implies that the UFC is self-aware. Continue.
Well, exactly. That's the thing, because nobody does this kind of thing. You know, not a lot of people call them out. And even when they do, it's just throwing things into the abyss because nobody listens, because there's never any consequence for them. I don't think fewer fighters calling the UFC out is not a great thing, but if it leads to more people calling out the UFC, as far as fighters are concerned, then it's a better thing.
Rich,
I think Sean's calling out the UFC.
I would never do that.
Look, is she getting screwed here? Yeah, she is. But you could very easily argue that as long as Amanda Nunes and as long as Holly Holm are out there, and you could say as long as Kat Zingano is out there, and as long as Sarah Kaufman is out there, as long as, at the time, Alexis Davis, she's not out there anymore. But as long as all of these people who have either never or only once lost to Ronda Rousey, then get in the back of the line and be a gatekeeper, you know? I mean, she's not fighting from a position of strength here. Should she have gotten a call? Fine. She's a professional prize fighter for a living. If she's that offended by not getting a phone call, then I question the mental makeup. Maybe this isn't the sport for her. And now she has a dollar value that she types to herself randomly and arbitrarily. And if the UFC doesn't match it, well, then she's going to go and make that number times zero. So, you know, fight Amanda Nunes on Fight Pass, or, you know, complain about it and get the fight moved to Fox Sports 1 in Boston or whatever. You know, do what you got to do. But understand the fact that you had two chances to be Ronda Rousey and you weren't good enough.
Just gonna let that linger.
Yes, you do that. And yes, I'm the one that farted in church and looked around. I've got zero empathy for situations like this. If she had one title fight loss and only one against Ronda Rousey,
I have the feeling that you just have zero empathy.
I spend it all on my kids. Look, if she had one loss to Ronda and not two, then everything I said, I never would have even thought, because she is clearly the next in line. Unfortunately for her, she's lost twice, and winning a bunch of decision victories over fighters that she's clearly better than, while getting knocked out by Kat Zingano and being subbed twice by Ronda Rousey, does not impress me enough to say, oh yeah, she's absolutely the only deserving suspect out there. Well, how do we know until Amanda Nunes gets a shot? And how do we know until Holly Holm gets a shot that Miesha Tate is more deserving than either of them? We don't, but they have the right to find out, you know, to test their mettle against the best once before she has the right to test her mettle against the best for a third time.
Well, I don't think that's really the issue. I wouldn't disagree about that.
Good.
You know, I think the issue is how the UFC handled the whole thing, which is kind of the repeating issue about pretty much all things, is how they handle
situations.
So
if they do it 100 times, why are you going to be surprised when it happens to you?
Well, who said she was surprised?
Clearly she has. Well, she wouldn't be so aghast and taken aback, you know, if she had any sense in her head to understand how the UFC works. You know, this billion-dollar company is not going to put their 43rd most marketable fighter had to change their complete priority structure. They just aren't. And if she can't handle that, she sure as hell isn't going to handle another armbar. Sorry.
I get what you're saying. I'm just saying I don't fault her for calling out the UFC for being petty and stupid.
No, they're petty and stupid. Good. Call them out. How much money has she gotten for doing that?
We don't know yet. We'll find out in a month or so.
Because that's how you negotiate with Dana White is strong arm tactics. That's why everybody who works at Station Casinos is part of the culinary union now.
Oh, no, that's not why. Exact opposite happens. Oh,
that's right. So, you know, I mean, it's nice to know that at least we know that she has her next job lined up as being the vice president of whatever for the MMA Fighters Association, which is where she's inevitably going to be with Nate Quarry and Brandon Vera in about 9 months.
Moving on from Misha, we might have...
Okay. Bring up Rod Maisie and all of a sudden Jamie, we got to move on. Don't want them going after us next.
Yeah, because we're...
Look at all the progress they've made against the UFC in 5 years. Oh.
George St. Pierre is apparently
out of those
making significant moves to determine whether or not he's going to return. Freddie Roach said this week that St. Pierre is setting up a 6-week test camp, and after that time, if he feels he's mentally ready to return, he's going to go through a legitimate camp and set up a fight. It seems clear that the motivation is getting there to St. Pierre, and if all goes well with this test camp, we're going to see him in 2016. I'm not entirely sure that he gets through the 6-week camp and doesn't say, okay, maybe not. But it
is nice triple negative.
Right. Rich, do you think he comes back in 2016? And if so, against whom?
I don't know. Ask me in 2017.
I finally throw to you and you give me that glib response, you son of a...
I'm just showing you that your instincts are almost always right, Jamie.
Yeah.
Look, do I think he does? Yeah, I do. But I mean, I've been wrong every single step of the way. I've said, yeah, he's coming back. And I've lost so many bets on so many cocktails to so many different people at this point, it's ridiculous. So, you know, really assume that if I say, yeah, I think he's coming back, that he's probably not. That said, I think within 6 weeks' time, whenever this camp starts, and I assume now so that it ends right before Christmas, you know, it's, you know, the way it's scheduled out, you know, that we'll know by the end of the year whether we're going to see him or not. So that answers that part of it. It really depends on how he feels in 6 weeks, and the only person who's going to be able to answer that is himself. That said, who he's going to fight? Well, the best fight would be Robbie Lawler. You know, we want to see a fight that he hasn't been in before. I mean, I know there are going to be a lot of people calling up for Johnny Hendricks' fight because, you know, he deserved to have a loss on his record in that fight, but whoever calls and says voluntarily, I want to see Johnny Hendricks fight, you know, unless it's Ben Askren, I don't want to see Johnny Hendricks fight.
Oh, good grief.
Hey, see, happy I got that one in there, Sean.
I'm surprised it took that long.
But who else is there? I mean, we don't need to see him fight BJ Penn again. You know, we've already seen that one twice. You happy about that one, Sean? You know, I don't need to see a rematch as good as moments of the Condit fight where I'm more than happy to let some rivalries just sit on one fight as opposed to trying to recreate the magic Dan Henderson, Shogun Hua, you know, Mark Hunt, Antonio Silva. No one's calling for those. Those can just stand on their own. So the best, he's not coming back to fight, you know, the middleweight he's not coming back to fight Lorenz Larkin. Okay. You know, he's coming back to fight a huge name, and Robbie Lawler with the belt or not is the fight that I want to see him in against.
Sean?
I don't see him coming back. I don't think, you know, I think he'll finish up the six-week camp, and then even if he feels pretty good, you know, what's he got to prove? You know, the welterweight division is not in that different a state than it was when he left, so it's not like some young lion has come along and run game all over everything, and he's got to come back and show who the boss is. You know, We're talking about, you know, by the time he comes back, Carlos Condit may be the champion. You know, I mean,
may I counter you real quick, Sean?
Sure.
There's no young Lion, but the current Lion is of his own generation, and he might want to make sure that nobody ever confuses the fact that he, George St. Pierre, and not Robbie Lawler, is the best welterweight of his own generation. And there could be some talk like that, you know, just quiet rumbles, you know, 3 months from now or 2 months from now, if he trucks Carlos Condit, you know, far more handily than GSP was able to.
That would
I mean,
be from,
then,
I mean, maybe from stupid people.
Yeah, right. I was just gonna say there may be those rumbles, but if they'd be real quiet.
I mean, who knows what's gonna motivate, you know, an athlete so far beyond the level of any of the three of us, you know?
Yeah.
Athletes will tell, you know, after the fact, they'll tell you all the time that they make up their own motivations. You know, you hear that from coaches all the time. You know, Deflategate is motivating the Patriots. No, I think winning a Super Bowl is enough motivation. Yeah, they come up with, you know, BS like that. Steve Kerr constantly telling Golden State Warriors, even though he's on hiatus right now, oh, yeah, nobody thinks they actually earned it. LeBron James had nobody left on his team, and we didn't have to face the Spurs. And sorry, Dan, for giving a basketball reference on the podcast. You know, but no, the Warriors' motivation would be to win the championship. But they're constantly being fed, you know, bullshit other motivation because they're athletes and we don't understand how they think. So is it possible that that's what he could pick up? Sure.
Yeah, I think if GSP was going to come back, it would be for an Anderson Silva caliber fight, and I don't think that fight is available. So I don't see him coming back to, like, because what's his end game going to be? Is he going to fight Robbie Lawler, win the championship, and then retire again? Like, I don't see the purpose in it.
I disagree on that last point, because I think Anderson Silva is absolutely available come UFC 200.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go then.
I also think Robbie Lawler would be available at UFC.
I think those are the top two options.
Yeah.
So
Jamie came up with one, and I came up with the other, and Sean came up with a nice beard.
I'm not entirely convinced that Robbie Lawler beats Carlos Condit in January. That's still very much a difficult fight for Robbie Lawler. And
if you're setting the line, not for betting, but if you're setting the percentages on this one, Jamie, I'm just curious. Percent chance Lawler wins.
Right now, I'd say 60. I'd say 60-40 in that one.
Yeah,
okay. I give him an edge. I think right now he is with how he has performed against Johnny Hendricks and
Rory McDonald.
I think he's very much at the best level he's ever been at. He's also
Sean. Same question, yeah.
Sorry,
James.
It's all right. I just think he is also he's proven throughout his career to be beatable. And Carlos Condit is a damn good fighter.
Yes.
Well, he also fights a style that plays directly into what Carlos Condit is good at.
Yeah.
So you set the percentage, Sean. Who do you favor by what percent?
I'd probably favor Robbie Lawler, but by very, very little. Like I would probably say like 51-49.
Oh,
I mean, honestly,
okay.
I just because, you know, I think Robbie Lawler, the only edge that Robbie Lawler has over Carlos Condit is the intangibles at
power.
This point. Yeah, I mean, there is the power, but Carlos Condit is not – he's not going to fold, you know.
No, he's not, but
– So, yeah, there is the power edge, but it's not – I don't think that's as big an edge or as, you know –
But it's not like Robbie Lawler is going to fold. Let's talk about this fight every week until, you know, like January or so.
I would love that.
Right? Because then we'll get completely worked up for it, and then Carlos Condit is going to cut his hand opening something on Christmas Day. And we'll have to fight.
Stop jinxing things.
No, seriously, though, like, I love this
first
fight.
First jinx, Jamie. We have to jinx it every week.
That's right.
Sorry, go ahead, Sean.
No, I was just going to heap praise upon the fact that this fight is happening. It makes me excited every time I think about it.
Oh, well, we can do that next week.
Yeah.
Sticking in the division, last week, Rich, you and I talked about the injury to Matt Brown, taking him out of the Kelvin Gastelum fight. Gastelum now has a new opponent as Neil Magny is stepping in. on short notice. Not at all a surprise. He has been one of the most active fighters in the UFC over the last couple of years. I think he's on... I think this will be his 11th fight in 25 months, which is an insane schedule for a UFC fighter. Very much in line with, you know, what Donald Cerrone's been trying to do at lightweight. Sean, thoughts about the new matchup here with Magny and Gastelum? Because I think it's still it's a good fight. It is a good fight. It's not as exciting as Brown Gastelum was, in my opinion. But I think the way that Magny fought against Eric Silva, you know, he's going to be a stiff challenge for Gastelum coming back to welterweight.
I think he's going to get wrecked.
He might.
Yeah, I like the Gastelum Brown match a lot, and I think Magny, you know, Magny is just, this is not his depth, the top of the division. I think Gastelum is going to be, yeah, I think he's got a rocket on his back, and he's going to be something special, and Magny's going to get beat up.
Rich?
Magny's a guy, as is Eric Silva, who he eked a split decision by, you know, beating, you know, Kunimoto and Alex Garcia. I mean, other than Tim Means, that's the only real outlier out there of all those fights in his streak. I'm with Sean. I don't see a path to victory. And I think Gastelum's going to do really, really brutal things with his elbows on the ground.
Last thing I want to touch on before we close out this week. TJ Grant has been out of action for 2.5 years now.
Khabib Nurmagomedov's life coach.
He was going to be in line for a title fight with
Henderson.
Yeah, it was with Benson Henderson. It was the fight that Anthony Pettis got in Milwaukee was originally going to be for TJ Grant, and he went out due to a concussion. He's apparently cleared out the concussion issues. He's not having the symptoms and all of that, but he hasn't returned to training or looking to get back into the cage, and he explained why this week, essentially saying, you know, the sport kind of left him injured and accumulating debt while on the sidelines, and just he's got a family, and he's looking at just the mounting cost of even attempting to make a comeback at this point, and it seems daunting, and he might not do it. It's a testament to where things are at for the better fighters in this sport that perhaps have not broken through to that next level of stardom, that you have someone as talented as Grant looking at retirement because it just costs too much to get back into it. I'm not entirely sure what the solution is here. I think there's something to be done with the UFC. I think there is some merit to an argument that Jose Aldo has placed out where there should be some type of yearly salary, where there is some type of monthly pay for the fighters. And I think there's a way to handle the contracts where that is in play, so that, you know, training costs get covered and things like that, where it's not as much out of pocket to be a fighter in hopes of one day getting a contract that, you know, makes up for what you are sacrificing. It's still a professional sport. There's a lot of money coming in, and the athletes are in a spot where they deserve more than they're getting at the moment. And I think the TJ Grant spot, this whole situation kind of highlights that. Rich, what do you think of TJ Grant's comments this last week? And just the general situation with him being 2.5 years out, and not necessarily being able to return from this injury.
Situations like this make it very clear to me that I will never rip on anybody who chooses not to be a fan of the sport anymore for ethical or moral reasons.
Yeah.
Because when you have somebody who is the number one contender who gets injured and in training, not in a fight. So, you know, the health insurance that they all have, the $50,000 rider runs out. that they can't even afford to train anymore tells me everything that's wrong with the borderline monopoly that they have. And it makes me stop telling all jokes and about Nate Quarry and Brandon Vera and John Fitch and Rob Fay and Yunz and all that, because first of all, UFC should be doing whatever they can under the table or even out in the open and say, look, you know, first of all, it's unethical, obviously, for a promoter to pay for one fight's camp and not for another. Okay, I get that. But when there's a limited amount of talent in every division, and lightweight is deeper than other divisions, mind you, but, you know, it's all cyclical and that could change and we could be on the beginning of a real downslide in the next 5 years at any division at any time, that you have a guy as talented as TJ Grant who is as close to getting the title as he was, and he can't afford to fight, he can't afford to train, that he feels justifiably like the, you know, the sport or the UFC chewed him up and spit him out. There's something really wrong with, not even with the sport, with the company, with the, for allowing that to happen, and that they aren't doing anything. You know, this isn't, who is the guy? This isn't Jason Thacker. All right. This is number one contender in the lightweight division barely 2 years ago. And it's just, it highlights everything that's going on that needs to be changed. Not that I have the answers, you know, not that I'm in the position to put them out there, but it rubs me raw. It really does.
Now, Sean, one of the things I think that could be drastically improved in the way that the fight sport is handled under the general, you know, essential monopoly that the UFC has, you know, with how much of a hold they have and with all the moves that they're trying to make to present themselves as a major sport and as on par with, you know, the NFL and the NHL and the NBA and all of that, which they're very far from, but they continue to want to put themselves that way. They have the Reebok deal now, and fighters are that's another avenue of income that's been taken away from fighters. One of the things I think that could be greatly improved is setting up some type of base salary where there is a yearly, you know, month by month payment for these athletes, and then you can set the contracts up where winning is still important. There are bonus structures in a lot of the major contracts in the other sports, and you can still set that up with win bonuses when you get in the cage and win, you know, bonus set up bonus structure for how often you're able to fight. That if that's a benefit to the UFC to have you fighting 3, 4, 5 times a year, that can be some type of escalator in a contract to go from there. But there has to be something done to account for just the very basics of training in this sport. And obviously there are so many gyms that it's hard to get a uniform on there, but there should be some type of stipend or whatever to account for how much money goes into getting a fighter to the cage.
Yeah, this is I'm exactly with Rich and all that he was saying. You know, this is the shameful kind of underbelly of what we watch. You know, it's you would think, I mean, this is common sense stuff. You know, this guy, TJ Grant, had 11 fights in the UFC and had won 5 in a row and was on the verge of title shot at lightweight. And now you're telling me that the organization has lost complete track of him? Like, this is a guy who wants to come back and train and can't, and they're doing nothing for him? Like, I don't understand how that's not, how he wasn't on their radar the entire time, you know?
He was.
How are they not monitoring? Yeah,
he was.
And if he was, why aren't they doing anything? You know, this is your.
What have you done for me lately?
That's my whole thing. You know, I don't understand. And that's the whole thing. Is these guys, you know, Dana White and the Fertittas, they're smart guys. you know, I can't understand how you can let this happen and not care about it, and just have so little, whether it's compassion. You know, these guys do good things for people too. You know, we've seen the things that have come to light that they do out of the public eye that have been really, you know, charitable, nice things. But how do you not take care of the basic needs of guys that get injured, getting ready to fight for you? You know, it doesn't compute. Like there's something missing in this whole outfit. Whether it's a department that they don't have, you know, whether, you know, like fighter relations or fighter, you know,
isn't that Matt Hughes' title? So this is Matt Hughes.
Matt Hughes or Chuck Liddell, get Matt Hughes on the case. Of course, he'd probably tell someone to walk off a concussion. So
there's a bad maybe TV not Matt show Hughes, promise.
But Matt Hughes either way, you
chasing
know,
down fighters who badmouth the UFC and gets them in line. Fighter relations, damn it! And he slaps them with the back of his hand. That's a
bad yeah. It's this is something. Something that there's something that it can't continue like it is, you know. At some point, you have to think this is going to come around and bite them in a serious way. And if for no other reason, they should do something about it for that reason. You know, even if they're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts, it's going to be something that comes up, you know, down the road, and it's going to be something that hurts them. I firmly believe that. I don't know how or when, but you can't be taken seriously as an organization, as a sports entity, when you have athletes that fight under your banner, that compete under your banner, who cannot take care of themselves financially.
How many years in a row will they need to be the fastest growing sport in the world before they can actually, you know, pay their employees, their independent contractors, what they're worth?
Yeah, and at what point do we stop pretending that they're independent contractors? You know, I mean, this is not, I like to talk about how MMA resembles WWE or professional wrestling. It's not the same. It's not. And, you know, it's a joke that professional wrestlers are classified as independent contractors. It's worse in the UFC. It's worse.
Yeah, I know when I had a plumber over a couple of weeks ago, I told him what he had to wear.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then he couldn't take any other jobs while he was with you.
Right, but I only paid him when he was actually doing something for him.
Yes, and speaking of how WWE does things, they do this better than the UFC does. And when you're talking about an industry like professional wrestling that takes care of the people within it better than you, you've got some serious problems.
And on that note, we will close out for the week.
On that high note.
thanks everyone for listening in. We'll be back next week to discuss this week's results and next week's UFC 193 event from the Etihad Stadium in Melbourne, Australia, and the return of Ronda Rousey against Holly Holm. And I'm assuming we'll talk Robbie Lawler, Carlos Condit again.
And Valerie Letourneau's fighting someone.
That's happening.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening in. Once again, for Rich Hansen and Sean Ennis, this
Stop
is
putting
Jamie
words
Pennick.
In my mouth.
Signing off.
I'll sign off for myself. For Rich Hansen, I'm signing off. Good night.
Good night, New York. Good night, New York.
Shut it down.
Well,